I'm here, but I have to mute. I'm in the kitchen. I just have to listen today.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I made it.
I'm glad to know it. Glad to hear you, Judy. We'll be starting momentarily.
All right.
Okay. Start with the Lashanya food, and then I'm going to do the incense in English. We had talked about the incense in other classes, including the Jewish history class, that it's a tool to stay safe during plagues and to keep plagues away from us. And then I will go into the history of the week, the history of the times. Lashem Yehud Kuchabrethu Ishkinte Bishilu Urkimu Udikilu Kilu Urkimu Liakta Lashem Yudhe Bavate The Yehuda Shalim Bashem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah La Sok Torah Mitzvah Vahino Amadunai Elohino Elena Maseya Dena Punane Elena Maseya Dena Punane. The incense offering. You are the one Hashem, our God, that our forefathers burned before you the incense spices in the time when the Holy Temple stood, as you commanded them by the hand of Moses, your prophet, as it is written in your Torah. Hashem said to Moses, take for yourself spices, sakte, onika, and galbanum, spices and frankincense that is pure, of equal weight. Shall they be, you shall make it into incense, a spice compound, the handiwork of a perfumer. Thoroughly mixed, pure, and holy, you shall grind some of it finely, and you shall place some of it before the testimony in the tent of appointment, where I shall designate a time to meet. I shall designate a time to meet you there. in the Holy of Holies, it shall be for you. It is also written, burn upon it shall Aaron the incense of spices. Each and every morning when he prepares the lamps, he is to burn it. And when Aaron ignites the lamps in the afternoon, he is to burn it. An incense that is continual before Hashem throughout your generations. The next section is coming from the Talmud to explain in more detail what has been taught or suggested or commanded in this section I just read. Taught did the rabbis the formulation of the incense mixture. How is it done? 368 maneh. A maneh is a quantity of volume. It's a way of measuring volume, like a cup of flour. So there were 368 maneh in it, in this incense formula. 365 corresponding to the number of days of the solar year. A manna for each day, half in the morning and half in the afternoon. And three manna extra, from which the Kohen Gadol would bring back the amount that fills his hands into the Holy of Holies on Yom Kippur. He would return them to the mortar on the day before Yom Kippur and grind them very thoroughly so that it would be the finest of the fine. 11 kinds of spices were in it, and these are they: Sakte, Onika, 1. Sakte, 2. Onika, 3. Galbanum, 4. And frankincense, weighing each 70 maneh, 5. Myrrh, 6. Cassia, 7. Shibboleth, nerd, 8. Ukarkom mishkal, shisa asar, shisa asar maneh, 9. Hakosht, shenayim asar, 10. Kilusa, shalosha, 11. Kinamon tisha, borit parshina tisha, 9. Let me go back to the English. Each of the 11 items, there would be 9, additionally, there would be 9 left maneh lai from Karshina, 9 kav of wine of Cyprus, 3 seah and 3 kav. If he has no wine of Cyprus, he brings wine that is white, that is old. The salt of Sodom, 1/4 of a kav, and ma'ale ashan, a minute amount. Rabbi Natan, the Babylonian, says, also amber of the Jordan, a minute amount. If he placed in it fruit honey, he invalidated it. And if he left out any one or of all of the spices, he is liable for the death penalty. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel says, Sakta is nothing but the sap that drips from trees. of balsam. Lye of farcina, why is it brought? In order to refine with it. The anica, in order that it should be pleasing. Wine of Cyprus, why is it brought? In order to soak in it, the anica, in order that it should be pungent. But is not urine more suitable for that? Nevertheless, they do not bring urine into the temple out of respect. It is taught by Rabbi Natan, and he says, would grind the incense, the one in charge would say, grind thoroughly, thoroughly grind, because the sound is beneficial for the spices. If one mixed it in half quantities, it would fit for use. But as to a third or a quarter, the law we have not heard. Said Rabbi Yehuda, this is the general rule. If it in its proper proportion, it is fit for use, even in half the full amount. But if he left out any one of all the, its spices, he is liable to the death penalty. It is taught, Bar Kappara says, once every 60 or 70 years, it would reach it, the accumulated leftovers. Of half the yearly quantity. Furthermore, Bar Kappara taught, if one had put into it a quartove of fruit honey, no person could have withstood the scent. Why did they not mix into it fruit honey? Because the Torah said, for any leaven or any fruit honey, you are not to burn from them a fire offering to Hashem. Hashem, the master of legions, is with us. A stronghold for us is the God of Jacob, Selah. Hashem, the master of legions, praiseworthy is the man who trusts in you. Hashem, save, may the king answer us. On the day we call, you are a shelter for me from distress. You preserved me with a glad song of rescue. You envelope me, Selah. And pleasing to Hashem, let be the offering of Judah and Jerusalem, as in days and in years gone by. As we know, we learn with the times, and what that teaches from both the Talmud and the Zohar is that the parasha of each week is the energy of the times, and so we need to study what has happened in those weeks, in each of the weeks. What are the times? What is its energy? The parasha this week, which we will read Saturday morning, is Tzav. Tzav is a Hebrew word that translates as command. It's spelled Tzadi Vav. It has a gematria of 96. Tzav, the parasha of Tzav, the Shabbat of Tzav, is the only parasha where the gematria of the name of the parasha, which is 96, has the same number of verses 96 verses are read this Shabbat. The Zohar is very clear. The word Tzav, Tzadi Vav, which translates as a command, is a connection to idol worship. The energy, the essence of why we read Tzav before Pesach, and it is always the Shabbat before Pesach. Why? Because the energy of Tzav is a vaccine against idol worship. The idea of the command being before Pesach, we need to understand Pesach a little bit. We all know what Pesach is. It's the redemption from Egypt. And Egypt is a narrow place, a limiting place. The redemption is to break free from that limitation. But who creates the limitation? We do. It's interesting to look at the other words in the Torah that have a gematria of 96. One of the words is Weyada'u, which would be translated as and his knowing. And there is a name of Lamech with a preceding Vav representing and Lamech. Lamech is a Yiddish word, a Lamecha, a Lamechol. It's a foolish person. It's a person who's not really using his brains, his smarts. In modern terms, we might say that a lemech is a nerd. But we could translate this word and lemech as the phrase and your 70. Why 70? Because Lamed Mem represents the 70 nations. And the Kaf Sofit at the end of Lamed represents the possessive pronoun of yours. So, and your 70. Is a connection to the 70 nations. It's a connection to the nations that participate in idol worship. If we start to read the parasha, it starts in chapter 6 of Leviticus, in verse 1. And I'm just going to read the English, as you know. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, in the second verse it says, command Aaron and his sons, saying, this is the regulation for the burnt offering. The burnt offering is to remain on the altar, hearth, throughout the night, till morning. And the fire must be kept burning on the altar. And the question is, why? why does the burnt offering have to remain overnight? The burnt offering is an elevation offering. It elevates the soul of the person bringing the offering. The burnt offering has to burn up completely. There's no sharing of the burnt offering. No one can eat part of it, not the Kohen, not the Israeli who brought it, not the person who brought it. Why is that important? Why does Hashem tell us that the elevation offering must be kept on the altar overnight? What if it's brought early in the morning? Couldn't it be taken off in the afternoon? The answer is yes, of course it could have been. But Hashem wanted it kept all night. So we've asked the question, why is it the elevation offering constantly on the altar? And one of the answers, as we know there are 70 answers, but one of the answers to this question is, what does an elevation offering do? It elevates. It's a burnt offering. It burns up. But in the process of burning up, it elevates the person who brought the offering, the sacrifice, because it represents the animal self, all of those lower emotions of the person. If we took the elevation offering off of the altar, the person would fall back into its own process. It needs to remain on the altar so that the person continually elevates all through the night. What does the night represent? The night represents darkness. The night represents the vessel. If we took the vessel off of the altar, it would be much simpler, very easy, God forbid, for that person to fall back to the level he was when he brought the elevation offering. The purpose of the elevation offering is to rise, to grow spiritually. And it needs to be on the altar all through the night, because during the night, the person could be attacked by the negative system. And if he is, he might fall back. So to protect the person who brought the altar, who brought the sacrifice, we leave it on the altar all night long. Verse 3, the priest shall then put on his linen clothes with linen undergarments next to his body, and shall remove the ashes of the burnt offering that the fire has consumed on the altar, and place them beside the altar. Why does the priest have to put on linen clothes? What's the difference what he wears? And we know it's very significant what he wears. That's why the Torah spends so much time in the last part of the book of Exodus explaining the 8 pieces of clothing of the high priest and the 4 pieces of clothing of the regular priest. And here it's describing the regular priest. In order to remove the dirt of the ashes, the charcoal of the ashes that will get over everything he has to be wearing white clothes, white linen clothes. What does it mean that he's wearing white linen clothes? He's connecting to the energy of purity. But then after he takes the ashes off of the altar and puts them beside the altar, he is to take off of the clothes that have probably gotten dirty and put on other clothing and carry the ashes outside the camp to a place that is ceremonially clean. But what is outside the camp? What's the difference between being outside the camp and inside the camp? It's a level of holiness. The priest who is holy has to carry the dirt, the ashes, outside of the camp where it is holy in the camp. He has to place it outside the camp where it's no longer holy. There's a whole relationship being described in how things are handled in these sacrifices, as how things become holy and then return to being impure and then become holy again. The fire on the altar must be kept burning. It must not go out. Every morning the priest is to add firewood and arrange the burnt offerings, the elevation offerings, on the fire and burn the fat of the peace offering on it, on the elevation offering. You see how the sacrifices relate to each other and they interact with each other. Someone wants to bring a peace offering. He wants to make peace with his neighbor. He got into an argument and he regrets the argument. He wants to apologize. He needs to bring an offering from the he brings an elevation offering. But at the same time, on the altar is also being burnt the peace offerings. But what happens if there's no peace offerings on the altar when the elevation offering is being had? The Torah doesn't say what to do. But there always needs to be this mixture of peace, which is the connection to the central column, as we will learn in a little bit. This is the nature of the offerings. An elevation offering does not work without the fat from the peace offering, the interconnection. The elevation offering is a consciousness of myself. I want improvement spiritually for myself. Whereas the peace offering is not about the person, but about his friends, the people he will eat the offering with. Verse 6, the fire must be kept burning on the altar continuously. It must not go out. This is now the third time that we have been told that the burnt offering has to be burnt completely on the altar. Why do we need to be told that three times? One of the explanations is that these three times, and then elsewhere there's a fourth time, is referring to the different approaches, the different aspects of the redemption and the promises of the redemption that Hashem has made to the children of Israel. There are four different aspects to the redemption, just as there are four redemptions. The first one was the redemption from Egypt. The last one will be the redemption of the children of Israel as they go into Jerusalem, as they complete the offerings, they complete the actions of the building of the third temple. It's important for us to realize that the bringing of the offerings, the bringing of the sacrifices, was not a physical action. It was physical in that the animal or the meal offering that was brought was physical. It was physical in that there was a fire on the altar. But it really was a metaphor for the spiritual choices that that person who brought the offering was making. Verse 7. These are the regulations for the meal offering. Aaron's sons are to bring it before the Lord in front of the altar. What was the meal offering? It's when someone couldn't afford an animal to sacrifice, he brought a meal offering. He brought a matzah. He didn't allow it to become flour and to be burned and to raise with chametz. The meal offering was matzah. Was guarded bread for a limited time, so limited that it became flat. There was no rise. There was no way around these regulations. These are very important laws. The priest is to take a handful of fine flour and oil, together with the incense on the meal offering, and burn the memorial portion on the altar as on an aroma pleasing to the Lord. Every animal was sacrificed with matzah, with a meal offering. Verse 9, Aaron and his son shall eat the rest of it, but it is to be eaten without yeast in a holy place. They are to eat it from the courtyard, the tent of meeting. It must not be baked with yeast. I have given it as their share of the offerings made to me by fire. It is most holy, like the sin offering and the guilt offering. The meal offering was the least expensive and yet the most important. Why was it the least expensive? So that more could be brought. The meal offering was a piece of matzah. It was flour that was guarded, just like our shmura matzah today when we have Pesach. one very important aspect later on in the parasha that we need to discuss. In chapter 8, verse 7, the word bow is the last word of that verse. The word bow means to come. We are told that that is the middle of the Torah in the number of verses. That's what's important. The parasha of being a vaccine against idol worship has to be at the place of the middle column, of the balance point between the sharing and the receiving. And the word bo, which is the reverse order of the letters bet vav. I shouldn't say the reverse order. Bo, bet vav, can be translated as his house. This is the point. The parasha tzav, the history of the Jewish people bringing sacrifices, is about connecting to the tree of life and primarily the balance point, the central column. This is the energy of the week. This is the energy of the history. This is what we all need to strive to accomplish. And I'm going to end our class with that understanding, because, as Trudy always tells me, I leave her thinking. With every class, there's something I mention that's food for thought. And going into next week with the holiday of Passover, where what is Passover? Passover is the energy of freedom, of breaking out of the limitations, of breaking free of the negative system. We need to understand that you can only break free of the negative system when you choose to connect to the tree of life, and specifically the central column. Does anyone have any questions?
No.
You have a beautiful Shabbat. It's coming up. Enjoy the reading. Even though in our building we are not having Shabbat services, it does not mean you cannot listen to the Torah. It does not mean you cannot listen and read the Torah portion yourself. And it's important that you strive to do so. At the back of the Siddur, there is a portion for each week, including Tzav. It's the portion that we read, the portion of the Kohen, of the priest, the first portion of Tzav. And it's in the Siddur. We're waiting for you to study it. I bid you all a wonderful week. And remind you that we will meet again next Wednesday on Passover itself, the first day of Passover. And we will discuss the reading of that week, even though it's not going to be as far as I understand. We won't have services still because of the virus. But we can study it ourselves. And that's what we are doing today. And we'll be doing next week. The bid you all shalom gadol, a huge amount of peace in your life and serenity in your life. Shalom.
Shalom, and thank you.
You're welcome.